Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
So the Lions drew 31 points apiece with the Hurricanes this morning. Pretty exciting game in the end. The Hurricanes came back right through that second half. Brian O'Driscoll is on the line. You're in Auckland, I'm hearing. Hello.
That's right, Joe. Yeah. Hi. Good morning. Good evening.
What time is it over there now?
It is just gone 7 in the morning.
Okay.
I've been awake for about 2.5 hours.
Sounds knackered.
You're awake because you're struggling to adjust to the rhythms of the sleeping patterns, or because you're an early riser?
It wasn't to do with the excitement of the game last night, right. Albeit it was a great game. But no, it's still haven't gotten right up to speed with New Zealand time. So, yeah, I'm seeing an awful lot of beautiful sunrises these days, which is the upside to it.
How long have you been out there?
Went via Singapore Tuesday, Wednesday of last week, and then flew on Thursday. So we arrived here Friday via Christchurch. So not that long, but long enough to think that I get to 6 o'clock in the morning at least. But at least there's plenty of company then in the kitchen. We've got a rented house here in Auckland. So, everyone's already at breakfast at seven. So everyone else is in the same boat too.
Okay. And so you've been to New Zealand numerous times in the past, obviously. When you're walking down the street or when you're out and about, are you being recognised? Are New Zealand fans stopping and talking to you? Or what's the general atmosphere?
Yes, some. I think where we are, we're just a little bit just outside Auckland, kind of really nice area that's looking down onto the city, but we're not right in the mix then by the viaduct where all the fans are, where they're all congregating. We're down there, obviously, for the game on Saturday beforehand and the build up to it, and then got buses out to Eden Park and went back there, and it was absolutely nuts. But for the most part, we've kind of kept ourselves slightly separate away from it. So, but we're going, going down the gym, you see Kiwis down there, and everyone's a rugby fan, so some people might recognize you and have a quick chat. And then it's funny, they've been largely really great and very easy to chat to, but there's the one or two edgy comments thrown in there. Particularly on Saturday when they had a couple of drinks on board, their confidence levels went to an all time high.
Surely not bringing up 05.
No, I've been lucky. Like, there's, I've heard one or two people kind of with throwaway remarks, thinking that they were funny, referencing some spear tackle, and I kind of just ignored what they said. But no, not one Kiwi has mentioned anything about 05. There's obviously a couple of references, on social media and stuff last night with the Ian Henderson tackle and comparisons and all that. But that's the first time that 05 has been mentioned at all. Thanks be to God, it's time that, well and truly time that was buried.
Yeah. So we might start with the game last night and then we'll get your impressions on the Lions, the first test and potential changes for the second test. So yeah, I'm saying the game last night. Obviously it was this morning for us, 31 points apiece. One of the, just seeing as we're talking about the general atmosphere there, one of the odder moments is that the New Zealand Herald did a clown version of Warren Gatland.
I saw that
in the paper. A very jowly one as well. Not a flattering clown by any means. And so in his press conference after his match, as if Warren Gatland doesn't have enough things going on in his life, he's asked about what he made of the clown in the paper.
I haven't seen it. Which newspaper was that?
It was the Herald.
I don't know what it was in reference to. Is that in reference to Michael Checker as well, is it?
No, not this time, though. No. It was in reference to the row the other day.
I haven't read anything from Hanson's quote. The only thing I heard from was that he'd rung up a radio station, so I thought that was quite unusual for an international coach to ring up a radio station. So, look, I'm just worried about us. I'm not worried about what Steve Hanson's saying or what any newspaper draws me up. Just, I hope it was a happy clown, that was all. You'd like to think you'd come home and things would be a little bit more positive from one or two members of the media. That hasn't happened, so you can't let that get to you. You just got to take that on the chin and not be affected by it. There's obviously been one or two people have had quite a significant campaign against me personally, but you know, that's kind of like water off a duck's back for to me. So you know, you got to concentrate on your own job and preparing yourself and not worrying about any specific individuals, but trying to be personal. So it's just part of professional sports, you know. So I couldn't give a toss if that was happening.
Yeah, I think he's dead right as well. The general timeline of that is that, so he on Sunday talked about Murray being targeted slightly. Steve Hansen rang into a radio show giving out about that. Gatland appears as a clown this morning. See, I'm not reading all of the New Zealand press, and maybe it's only the more extreme articles or pictures like the clown one are making their way over to this side of the world. Generally, are they as ridiculous and kind of pathetic as that, you know, Gatland as a clown looks to be?
Like, that's a disgrace, to be honest with you. Like, I've been brutally honest, I haven't been picking up too many New Zealand papers while I've been out here. But, you know, no matter what, you still hear through some way or another about what's being reported. You know, if you're following online, you're seeing the contentious things being said and written and talked about. And I actually just saw that actually on some of the TV footage where they were talking about the article last night, this morning when I was awake. So I wasn't even aware of it until an hour ago. But I think it's pretty tasteless, their level of journalism at times. One or two of the papers in particular have really gone hard after Gats and after the Lions, and nothing positive that the Lions can do the Lions have done has been reported. I think I spoke to Gats when I presented the boys the jerseys last Friday, and one of his disappointments was all the community work that has gone unnoticed. He was adamant that they were going to really get involved within the communities, within hospital visits, schools, all of that grassroots level stuff, and they put a huge amount of time and effort into it, and it's been hardly reported in the media. I think that's been a frustration, because they're doing everything they can to put their best foot forward prior to playing any rugby, and they're just getting chopped at the knees time and time again by the way they're playing, by being beaten by provincial teams, and now that sort of tasteless, lazy journalism. You know, I wouldn't be a fan of it.
Yeah, I was kind of glad he gave the answer he did, to be honest. You mentioned presenting the jerseys there. What a lovely thing to be asked to do. Did you feel it was a huge honour? Did you think twice about doing it? Did you said a few words, I presume?
Yeah, all of the above. I didn't think twice about it. No, it's I've been presented by Lions of the past, be it Ian McGeachan or Willie John McBride, and my initial thought is, oh, Willie John McBride mustn't be getting in until Saturday morning. and it was, it's a huge honour, Gats hadn't gone and told anyone, so it was pretty hush hush, and then I walked in and I couldn't actually hear even my introduction. So I walked into it's a huge room these days with a lot of players and nearly as many staff. I wouldn't say it's daunting, but it's the first time. It's funny, you know, I've been on the four previous tours, but I felt a generation older than those players for the first time. Yeah. You know, 4 years is a long time in rugby, but you know, to be involved in one tour, you know, in Australia, and then 4 years later feeling a disconnect from that squad was probably a good thing. But it was a real honour to be able to go in and say a few words to them, speak to them a small bit about what Lions meant to me, and to present those jerseys to guys, you know, whatever about those that have been on previous tours, but the excitement and anticipation of guys getting their first test start the next day is a really special time in your career.
Mm. And did you hang around and chat to them, or did off you go?
Yeah, no, I did. I chatted for a while and talked to a number of the Irish boys and guys that I would have known, you know, Owen Farrell and Andy and some of the coaching staff and Gats and one or two others. So yeah, I hung around for a bit, but then I didn't want to overstay my welcome at the same time. You know, it's preparation time, and the squad just wants to be with one another in total comfort. And even though I wasn't doing any TV stuff, you have to know you know, your role there, get in, do it, you know, say your pleasantries and then move on.
Yeah. So the first test finished 30 points to 15. So it's just incredibly difficult now from a tour point of view, in that the Lions have only ever come back from 1-0 down to win a test series on two occasions. Firstly in 1899 and then 1989, both in Australia. So that's kind of what you're up against in historical terms here. The performance against New Zealand in that first test, what did you make of it?
I think in parts really good. It's a bit like playing against a Barcelona in football. They're going to have more possession than you. They're a possession team. They, like, as much as New Zealand statistically kick the ball more than anyone else, they kick the ball more because they've got the possession of the ball more. So, I'd say they do everything more than every team. I did feel as though the Lions, you know, brilliant start. It would have been incredible if Elliot Daly had managed to get in the corner in the first couple of minutes. It would have really rattled their cages. But I thought the way they played themselves into the game, they had to soak an awful lot of pressure. They were right in the mix, and to go in at halftime, was it 13-8 down?
Yeah.
You know, we would have been happy enough. We were right up in the gods. So it's funny when you watch the game live that far away, you really don't see any of the detail. I have to go back and watch it again. But when I did, and when I saw the analysis of the second half in particular, games are won and lost on big moments and momentum swings. And it was 43 minutes when the Lions, you know, made great inroads, and they had a 3-on-2, and Ben Teo decided to tuck and go and try and get in closer under the sticks, and got hit, turned over, and they cleared pressure. And you would never see the All Blacks butchering a 3-on-2 like that. And that means definitely level pegging, 13-all, with an opportunity of Owen Farrell knocking over a conversion, 15-13. That completely changes everything. And, you know, as I said, the momentum's with you, but then just a little bit of doubt, a little bit of pressure, it quietens the crowd, the knock-on effect of that. Those things are pivotal in games against the All Blacks. You have to take your opportunities. You're going to create, you might only be able to create three or four of them, but you've got to take 75-80% of them. And you saw the All Blacks are going to score three tries, maybe four tries, so you're going to have to score as many, because you're not kicking them to victory, so, or to defeat. So there's some good things, but some disappointing things as well in there, in that, you know, a couple of guys probably subpar performances, and I think you might see a couple of changes as a result of that.
Yeah. I suppose a higher calibre player will finish off those chances. As you said, the All Blacks would never butcher a 3-on-2, and it's been a theme of the tour in all the press conferences afterwards, where Lions management have talked about, well, we're going to lower the penalty count next time, and we're going to hopefully finish off some chances. And neither really happens. And so you can't really have a realistic expectation it's suddenly going to happen the next day. Aside from the really eye-catching moments of Lions attack, like the O'Brien try, I suppose, chief amongst them, and Watson's running, from general play, it looked like the All Blacks were pretty comfortable from a defensive point of view. Like, if we're saying the Lions are going to have to score three to four tries here, realistically, it's very hard to see that happening.
Yeah, it is difficult to see it. But then at the same time, there were other line breaks. So in around that same time, John Davis made a break up that left-hand side, offloaded some nice interplay. Liam Williams got stopped a couple of yards from the line. They gave away a penalty and they decided to kick to the corner. I have no problem with that decision, rather than kicking the goal to get themselves to, you know, whatever it was, 13-11 that would have been. I have no issue. And then they ended up turning over the line out. But they were making inroads. They were making line breaks. There was another one in the second half. Elliot Daly spilled a ball after that cross field. He just couldn't quite control. He gets an offload to John Davis and they're gone again. So there were moments that it was very, very close. And as much as the All Blacks would be pleased with their performance, you look at certain frailties within their defensive system. They're going to be playing with more new combinations this weekend as well that have embedded themselves in properly. So I think I'm the eternal optimist, that you will create more opportunities for yourselves. But the reality is the All Blacks will get better in their attack game too. So it's which wins through.
And do you expect New Zealand to play in a very similar way from an attacking point of view on Saturday, which was pretty much just go up the guts off Smith?
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see. I presume he'll stick with Teo at 12. You know, when you're getting Ben Teo, you know what you're getting. He's, you know, some of those collisions on Sunnyvale were absolutely brilliant. And I think this defensive system works really well where he doesn't have to make any decisions. I was talking to Dave in the lead up to it that I had a few concerns over him because of his defensive system, not so much his tackling, but because they're not trying to drift off anyone, he was able to just target Sunnyvale and absolutely end him a couple of times, which he duly did. And that's what you're getting with Ben Teo. And maybe what you're not getting is that ability to link play and use the outside backs. And so when you make your bed, you have to sleep in it. And, you know, the really positives of the game also are sometimes overshadowed by the negatives of a missed opportunity. But Ben Teo, you know, had a very solid game. It seemed as though they'd pre-orchestrated that Johnny Sexton was going to come on at a particular time because Teo was going well and the team were going well. Owen Farrell probably wasn't having his best game ever. But they are creating, as you know, they're getting into good shape at times, and they do have the All Blacks stretched. It's just at times pass quality or something slows them up where they just can't quite get to the extremity or get that outside break. And the scramble of the All Blacks defence is excellent as well. So
is there any,
it's a combination of a couple of things.
Is there any reason Sexton coming on, Farrell going to 12, didn't really seem to have any impact on things?
I think New Zealand just got comfortable with what they were seeing in front of them, the shapes they were seeing in front of them.
Right.
I think they, at that stage, probably the rest of the Lions team were a small bit punch drunk because of the amount of defending that they had done. Mm. Defending is considerably more tiring than attacking, and the stats, I think they'd made an enormous amount of tackles in that first half, and that has a knock-on effect in runners turning up and being options for your outside half, runners inside and out, to soften defences up, and you just felt as though the same energy wasn't quite there in that second half. It showed a few times where they got really great shape, and Sinclair went through one time, and you know, there were one or two other half breaks, but you just need everyone running really good decoy lines and being in place, and that's what makes the All Blacks so good. They look as though it's very natural, but they're incredibly well drilled, and their shape is so simple, with a clear understanding as to what they want to do and how to affect it.
Another very strange moment then from this morning is that against the Hurricanes, as the game drifted away from the Lions, there were no substitutions made. The front row was on for the full 83 minutes. Finn Russell came on for a HIA for 5 minutes. And Gatlin was asked about this afterwards, because clearly there was a desperate need for fresh legs, not least when Henderson was in the sin bin. And, you know, so the Geography Six, as they've been nicknamed, and it will follow them around forever, unfortunately for them, none of those really saw game time. And Gatlin gave his rationale in the press conference this morning.
Yeah, well, always those players were called out as cover. That was the case. You know, I know there's a lot being made about that. In terms of, you know, we made the decision to bring players in there for cover and protect as many of the Test 23 as we could. I mean, if we didn't have those players here tonight, that then we probably would have had, you know, players on the bench for Saturday. You know, that may have had to be exposed. I mean, lost Robbie Henshaw. Dan Bigger went off with an HIA, so you potentially would have been exposing, you know, players from your Test 23 early on. So,
Warren, you mentioned that the lot was made about devaluing the jersey. Does that mean that it affected you and changed your plan, or were you all along just going to bring these players off the bench in the case of an injury?
Yeah, possibly. You may have been a little bit more positive about bringing those players on fresh and that, but, you know, so much was made of that. You kind of went, okay, but I understand people's views and whatever, so you just, you know, you've got to take cognizance of that, and so we, you know, we made a collective decision with the coaches that we would make them as injury replacements or as HIA replacements, which has, you know, happened in two of the occasions.
So he's getting ridiculed for this generally, and it's a difficult one because in some ways there's something admirable about someone who will listen to people's views. And I know you said to Dave on Friday you weren't overly happy to see these guys being called up because they just happen to be close by. And Gatland takes this on board. But then, I don't know, it just looks like such a mess when you drag these guys like Thomas Francis, Corey Hill, Christian Dacey, Gareth Davies, Alan Dell out. It's humiliating for them. They don't see a minute of game time when fresh legs were desperately needed today. Gatland's being ridiculed. The whole thing's just a bit of a mess.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I think Warren Gatland's made a mistake there personally because he's not staying strong with his convictions. I think if you are going to have those guys out, and he talks about protecting the 23, well, there's a chance that he hasn't gone and protected the 23. So someone like Ian Henderson could easily feature this weekend. Mm. But yet he hasn't been protected because he's had to go and play the full 80 minutes. Granted, he had 10 minutes in the sin bin. So he's gone and played a full game on the Tuesday. And if he is in contention to be on the bench, and say he's on the bench and there's an injury in the first minute or two of the test match, he plays 78 minutes.
Yeah.
That's 70 minutes on a Tuesday and then 78 minutes on a Saturday. And that's talking about protecting test players. I don't see how that's been good business at all. Mm. I also, from what I've heard, those players that have been involved feel no part of it whatsoever. I think he's done a disservice to them too, because they feel exactly that they're kind of, they're unused cannon fodder.
Yeah.
And
that's embarrassing for them. It's utterly embarrassing.
It is. I think they're just waiting to head home. I think they go home tomorrow. Thursday,
right.
from what I'm hearing, but I don't think that worked. And you cannot have a front row on for 80 minutes. When was the last time you had front row? That's doing players a disservice, irrespective of whether they're test players or not.
Mm. And
does not play 80 minutes anymore?
Yeah. Does any small party think, well, there's a certain nice quality about in Gatland, he listened to everyone saying, you've devalued the jersey here. And so he almost changed his mind. But obviously the players were still there. So changing your mind meant it resulted in the way it did today.
There is an upside to it. But there's an upside. Sorry to cut wrong. You're right. There is. Okay, he did listen. But with every upside to that, there's the downside of, well, why are they there in the first place? Or why didn't you pick someone else? Or, you're lacking with your convictions as a coach to follow through and look after your squad. And who cares what everyone thinks? Because
you
talked about, in the media about not really being bothered with what's being said by the New Zealand press. But yet he's been bothered by this. So, it is affecting him and his decision making in some. I don't think he's handled that brilliantly, personally.
Yeah, it's like someone should have said to him, there's a picture of you in the paper as a clown already. You should really just not worry.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But, I stand by it, the geography thing. And I had heard prior to the tour that this was a chance that might be the case.
Yeah.
But I wasn't anticipating some of the quality of those players being brought in as to the standard they were, and I wasn't even aware who Corey Hill was, to be honest with you.
Oh, thank God, because I just thought I was incredibly ignorant of some of these guys.
No, and I'm a pundit, and right. I'm meant to know these things, but I haven't covered a whole lot of Wales in the last year, and I think he's with Newport Gwent Dragons. I don't cover them, but so guys like him, how does he feel? Is he able to go away and say that he's been a lion?
I know.
Like, I'm sure he's probably embarrassed by it.
Yeah, no,
it's a terrible situation to find yourself in as a player. And now as a coach, I think the backpedaling has not served him well.
No.
And this will become more of a talked about. I said it to Dave last week, and I'll say it again, that this will become a big issue and a stick to beat Gats with if they lose the series 3-0. If they lose it this weekend, it'll be talked about all the more. But if they lose the series 3-0 in particular, this will be a majorly contentious issue that will never be allowed to happen again.
Yeah. We've about a minute left, so I'll bundle this last question up. Changes for Saturday. The word seems to be that O'Mahony's going to come out altogether and Warburton will go in. And based on this morning, Courtney Laws looks like he's going to be involved somehow.
Yeah, I think you could find Courtney Laws starting. I was listening to Gatz in his post match interview. He wasn't lauding Henderson's performance as much as maybe everyone else was. No. But Henderson would be a good option in a back row second row combination if they wanted to sub both second rows, have four on the pitch: Alan Wynn, Cruz, Laws, and him. Have all four of them in the 23. That's a possibility. Outside of that, George North could have played himself back into contention for a spot on the wing. And I think he'll stick with Farrell and Teo. O'Mahony, from what I hear, I think he's going to be gone. And he's going to play Sean O'Brien at seven, and Morbin's going to move across to the blind side. I can understand they need to get a bit more aggressive at the ruck too. They need to slow possession down, because the New Zealanders absolutely kill the Lions in that area. That's where they're better than everyone else in the world. Their ability to win ruck ball with two players and one at times, and Aaron Smith has it gone before you think it's even happened.
Brian, brilliant stuff. We'll check in a few days. Thanks for that.
Thanks, Joe. Cheers.
Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.